teased you last week that we're going to be starting a theme for the summer. And I'm saying a theme rather than a series because series scare people like, oh man, I got to be there every week. No, it's just a theme, all right? They will all be loosely connected around this idea. In fact, this message is not even, it's loosely connected to the theme, but it is part of the theme. And the theme is just a four-letter word, not as in a bad word, but a good word, four-letter word, sent. Sent. S-E-N-T, sent. And so I'm not letting you off the hook as much as wisdom would say, oh, everybody's just needs to be loved and coddled because they've been through such a hard time, and you just need to encourage them and let them receive the love of Jesus. And that's good. You do need that, and we'll always be a part of that. I'm not letting you off the hook because this idea of being sent says it's not about just showing up and filling a seat, but God has called you. You are ministry. Part of it's coming out of back in January. I heard a pastor say that to other pastors in this conference. It says it's time to stop treating people like they're fruit to be harvested and treating them like they're seeds to be planted. And so this idea of sent, I'm going to treat you like seed. I'm going to treat you like missionaries. I'm going to train you. And did you know it's always been the plan? We've just kind of messed it up somewhere down the line with the church, right? What does Ephesians 4 tell us? The church and the fivefold ministry is all about. It's for the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry. And so the work's not done here. The work's done there. And we've been sent. And so if anything, through this series in the summer, I want there to be a shift in your mindset. I'm doing it from here, but I want it to happen in your spirit, that I'm the one that is sent. I'm the disciple that's called to make disciples. And so we're going to look at this calling and this mission that is before us. And maybe it's not the best series to preach to grow a church because it's not, it might actually challenge us and make us a little uncomfortable, but we're going to just kind of be obedient to the Lord if that's all right. And so today's question, and title, I guess, not every title has to be a question, but today I really do have a question. And the question is this: are you part of the remnant? And I'm going to explain that in a little bit, but are you part of the remnant? And so we'll unpack that just a little bit. But before I get there, how many of you are fans of leftovers? I am a fan of leftovers. I am the only one in my house, and that is why I'm as large as I am, because nobody else will eat the leftovers, and there's still a part of me that says food should not go to waste, and so I do my due diligence, and I take care of everything in the fridge that I possibly can. I will eat cold lasagna, cold fried chicken, cold pizza, cold hot dogs. I will. Okay, I must confess, late last night, 10 o'clock, I did microwave the hot dog for 30 seconds. Instead of that. But anyway, leftovers, this idea of the things that everybody else has dismissed and everybody else has considered disposable, we give it value. And I want to talk about the remnant, this idea of a few that are left. And so you could go study this out in the Old Testament. This idea of the remnant really came out of the captivity. In fact, the reference we're going to look at today in Romans even goes back before the captivity, back when Israel was struggling with Baal and all of those kind of things, the message to Elijah, and we're going to look at that there, this idea. There's still some left that are still faithful to me. In fact, I'll tell you what my two points are, and really it's I'm just sneaking a third point into the conclusion, and they do all start with the same letter. The definition of the remnant are the few and the faithful that choose to follow Jesus. The few and the faithful that choose to follow Jesus. And as much in the Old Testament, it was about the captivity. It was about in the midst of God's punishment and seeking of his people. That punishment was not to wipe the people out, but it was to purify them. And so whether it was the Assyrians or the Babylonians, the prophets always talked about a remnant, that there would be those left. So the Assyrians and the Babylonians, one of their main tactics for conquering a nation, and Israel would have been one of those nations that they were conquering, was to relocate them into their cities and then get them to indoctrinated into their culture so that their individual culture as a nation would disappear, so that they would marry the people of the Assyrian people or the Babylonian people, and then the Hebrews themselves would cease to exist. And as much as that's a physical thing in the Old Testament, so the prophets talked about, although there are those who didn't give in to that, who maintained their identity as the children of God, and there's going to be a day when I will bring the remnant back. And really, we can talk, go all the way to 1940s, and the establishment of Israel is really the fulfillment of this prophecy that the people of God. So in a very physical way. And so I often talk about what we see in a very physical way in the Old Testament is really a spiritual truth that we see in the New Testament. What is this idea of being the remnant of God, the few and the faithful? And so part of this came once again praying during this pandemic and quarantine and all of those things. And in no ways do I want to say, because we were quarantined, we were in captivity. They don't compare. And yet there was a shaking of his church. And the question is, who are the few and the faithful that remain in the shaking? Are you the remnant? So that's a really long introduction, right? So let's get into it. Let's talk about, number one, the few. The few. So I wrote my main idea like this. The remnant are the few and faithful who follow the Lord, no matter the conditions and culture. And that's a big part of this remnant that is under attack, is the culture in which they live. And so let's talk about the few. How many know that there's always somebody in the Bible who was counting people, because the Bible gives us numbers. And I'm not a numbers kind of guy. I'm okay that there's less people here than there's usually here. I have to at least confess that somewhere if I get into it. But, you know, numbers. So there were 70 elders. Last week we looked at that with Moses. There was 12 disciples. There were 120 in the upper room. We're going to read passage in Romans chapter 11. It says there were 7,000 who had not bowed their knee to Baal. There's always these numbers. And the question is, are you going to be numbered among those that are numbered? Identified as the few, the minority within the majority. So I didn't read our passage yet. So let's look at Romans chapter 11 to get us started right here. Romans chapter 11, verse 2. So Apostle Paul says, God did not reject his people whom he foreknew. Don't you know what Scripture says in the passage about Elijah? How he appealed to God against Israel? So if you remember that whole story, this is Elijah had just gotten done defeating the prophets of Baal and like killing all of them himself kind of thing. And then he ran away because Ahab and Jezebel were chasing after him. And he laid under a tree and he said, I want to die. And God sustained him in that moment. And then that whole story where God put him up in the mountain. He says, I'm going to come. And he wasn't in the fire and he wasn't in the wind. Where was he? He was in the still small voice. And then this was the conversation. Elijah saying, I'm the only one. But God had something to say. So here's what Elijah said in that moment when he had the audience with God. He said, Lord, they've killed your prophets and torn down your altars. I'm the only one left, and they're trying to kill me. And what was God's answer to him? I have reserved for myself 7,000 who have not bowed the knee to Baal. And so too, at the present time, there is a remnant chosen by grace. So too, at this time, there is a remnant chosen by grace. This is in the new covenant. This is in the day in which we live. Paul says there is a remnant. And I know Paul's talking a lot about moving from Judaism to Christianity and Christ as the Messiah and those kind of things. But I think there's a truth here that God's wondering who's going to be the few. So the significance of numbers, I want to take you through three passages real quick in Matthew that uses this word, the few, and show you that as much as we tend to think we're okay, we ought to really think about it and answer that question. Are you the remnant? So this comes out of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13. And it's about the two roads. So you've heard this one before, but let's just talk about it a little bit. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. It's the many versus the few. So we got different roads with different destinations. And the difference is the width and the amount of people that are on it. It's an easy road with a lot of people. See, so if you've ever done like the, evangelism explosion and the Ray Comfort approach to talking about the gospel, this is one of the things that is used. You ask somebody, do you think you're going to heaven? And most likely they would answer yes. And then you ask them, why do you think you're going to heaven? And they're going to say something like, because I'm a good person. Which then you unpack with, okay, the Bible says we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. There's not one that is righteous, and the wages of sin is death. But the gift of God is eternal life. There's only, he is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through him. It's not some kind of cosmic scales where my good has to outweigh my bad. And it really is a great deception, right? There's a great deception. There's a lot of people on a wide road that's leading to destruction who think they're okay. And we ought to really ask the question. And I'm not sitting here trying to, I got to be careful in this message. I just want you to be a part of the remnant. I want you to be a part and numbered among the few. I'm not trying to create some kind of insecurity. Oh, you're not really saved and you're on your way to hell. That's not what I'm trying to create. But I am telling you, so there was a day in our nation where you could say to be an American was to be a Christian. But I'm telling you, today is not that day. And more, that passage itself is being defined in our culture. More and more, to be a Christian is going to be a narrower and fewer. And the question is, will you be numbered among the few? It really is the great. So in that very same chapter in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus paints this picture, and this is a scary picture. People who thought they were okay, thought they had said the right things and done the right things. Here's what Jesus says to them. So this is down in verses 23 and 20, or 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. That's a hard passage right there. Those people thought they were okay. They thought they had said the right thing. Lord, Lord. They thought they had done the right thing. We did things for you. And yet Jesus said, I never knew you. Are you a part of the few? Are you the remnant? So let's look at another passage, Matthew chapter 9, verse 36 through 38. Jesus says, when he saw the crowd, or this is about Jesus, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like a sheep without the shepherd. So once again, the crowds, the many, the majority, Jesus sees them, they're lost. And he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. The few. See, in this passage, you're one or the other. You're wheat to be harvested, or you're a worker in the field. And a lot of churches have been built around the idea is we got to reach the wheat. And you know what? We'll always be a place where wheat is welcome to be harvested. I love the idea of giving an altar call and somebody responding to Jesus and entering into a new destiny on a new road because of the grace of Jesus Christ. That's not going to change. But what does need to change is you need to answer that question, which one are you? And there will always be a place to come into church and to receive ministry, to receive what Jesus offers. That'll always be a part of what church is about, okay? But the question, the bottom line, the definition of this few is that they're a worker. They're a worker in the harvest. They're a worker in the kingdom. They're not just a consumer, but they are a contributor to the kingdom. That's a defining characteristic of whether you're the few and the faithful, if you're the remnant. Really quiet. Sorry. Not really. Matthew 22:14. For many are invited, but few are chosen. Many are invited, but few are chosen. There comes a story of the great banquet, and all the ones that were invited didn't show up, and so they went and got other ones, and then there was somebody there who didn't have the right clothes, and they threw them out to weeping and gnashing of teeth. And the idea is kind of topsy-turvy on who actually ended up in there. And it's kind of a strange statement. So even even if you don't have the whole story in the context, just that statement itself, many are invited, but few are chosen. So you can get into this really long theological debate. In fact, just this week I did a Zoom, recorded Zoom meeting with John Baker, who was doing Bible classes online for students in Curacao, where he's a missionary. We support them as missionaries. And he said, we're at this part talking about election and Peter, and I just thought maybe you could come be my resident theologian, and we could talk about that a little bit. And so you might find it really boring, but we talked about Calvinism versus Arminianism, and we talked about, so bottom line, in ways we understand, this idea of do we choose God or does he choose us? And the answer is yes. Okay, and we have a whole lot of debates and a whole lot of discussion of trying to understand in our human language and our human terms that divine truth, okay, that it is a yes thing, that it is not by works that we are saved. I'm powerless in myself, and yet it does take my free will to make a choice that it's by grace, what he did through faith, through my acceptance of his gift. And so free will versus election and predestination. So anyway, if you want to have a long conversation about that, I can do that and make your head spin, and it'll be all right. But here's a Pastor Sam definition, if you will. So in this passage, many are invited, but few are chosen. To me, the definition of chosen is where free will meets the call of God. The many, And really, I would say everyone is invited. Everyone is called, but there are few who accept. See, the idea of chosen in that story were the ones who actually ended up in the banquet hall. It didn't count that they were called, that they were invited. It's the ones who ultimately chose to be there. They became the chosen. So the idea of being the remnant is like being the chosen. And once again, the question is, are you a part of the remnant? Let's talk about the faithful. Let's get to part two here. They're the few and they are the faithful. And so in our passage in Romans chapter 11, going back to the story of Elijah, it says there were 7,000 who have not bowed the knee to Baal. To not bow. The faithful, this idea that there will always be a culture that stands in opposition of following God. And that's the world that we live in. In fact, this idea of Babylon itself. Babylon representing... So I wish I had more time, but if you were to go back and read Daniel... first several chapters of Daniel, that would take you right into the midst of this Babylonian idea of how are we going to steal a nation's identity and to make them a part of who we are. And so you'll remember Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel were the cream of the crop of the Hebrews, kidnapped from their home country, taken to live in the capital of the world power of that day, fed their culture, fed their foods, fed their language and their way. And yet Daniel chapter 1 verse 8 says, remember they were different. Daniel set up a test. We're not going to do it your way, because we serve God and we're going to do it his way. And this is what it says about Daniel in chapter 1, verse 8. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief officials for permission not to defile himself this way. As much as I read the NIV, I have to admit I kind of like the King James better on this one. It says, Daniel purposed in his heart. Daniel made a stand, said, I will not give in to the culture. I will not give in to the stealing of my God and my faith and my identity. In fact, a worthwhile study is go back and study the names of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Because part of it is Babylon, the Babylonians gave them new names. They had their Hebrew names, And those names were packed with meaning, like God is good and God is my judge and God is present. I mean, they were powerful, identity-driven names. And then the names they gave them were all about the culture, the gods that they worshiped and the things of that culture. Now, what's weird about it is Daniel is the Hebrew name, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are the Babylonian names. I don't know why we know them by that particular, but you can find all those names there. But I'm telling you, we live in a culture that is trying to steal our identity in Christ. And I'm sad to say that the culture is doing a good job as a whole when it comes to his church. And that's why I'm talking about a remnant. Even within the church, there's going to be a difference between the few and the many. There's going to be a minority and the majority of those that could be called the few and the faithful. And I'm going to lead us to be the few and the faithful. I want to be counted in those numbers. The story continues with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When I use that phrase, don't bow, that's literally the story of chapter 3, where Nebuchadnezzar sets up a statue unto himself and says, when the music plays, everybody has to bow down or I'll throw you in the fiery furnace. We don't have a glimpse into that pre-conversation, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego talked, looked at each other and said, we can't do that. And sure enough, when everybody else was bowing, there were three that were standing. Now, part of me is curious, where was Daniel on that particular day? But I'll have to save that one for heaven. We know the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Said, you can't pray. He continued to pray. And when we stand, here's the preacher in me, like if I'm preaching Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, is when we stand, he stands with us. They threw them in the fiery furnace. They weren't burned, and there was one. I believe it was Jesus himself standing with them right there. And they came out, and Nebuchadnezzar actually gave a great gospel proclamation that this is the real thing and the real God. And our culture needs to see us standing when everyone else is bowing. And so what does it look like to be the faithful in the midst of a Babylonian culture? And so I'm going to take you to a strange passage, and I typically stay away from Revelation because I don't get it. I'm a chicken, right? And there's a lot of people who get to it, but we're going to go to Revelation chapter 14, and this is right in the midst of all the stuff that people like to get sensational with. This is right in the midst of the Great Tribulation and the Mark of the Beast and the Antichrist and all of this kind of stuff. But in Revelation 14, as much as this is futuristic, and I believe it, I believe that what this time frame that's talking about right here is after the blessed hope, and that those who have went up, and the 144,000 that are mentioned is really the revival among the Jews and the Hebrew people who come to faith in Jesus Christ. But I don't necessarily want to unpack all that. I just want to look specifically at this principle that there was a minority in the midst of a majority and what marked them. And so I'm going to read you verses 1 through 11 and save verse 12 for the zinger. Okay? All right. So verses 1 through 11. Revelation 14, then I looked, and there before me was the Lamb, standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. We're going to see later in this passage that's in contrast to having the mark of the beast. So once again, this idea of Babylon, we see it futuristically, that Babylon is used of this idea of a one government and one religion and one nation, a one world economy, and all of those kind of things. And so once again, I know you can get into sensational, but you know what? As sensational it may seem, how many thought maybe during this quarantine, was like, we're a lot closer to some of that stuff than we thought we were. So I'm not trying to get off into all that, but that's just my own two cents about that. You know, that the stage is kind of set for this kind of thing to actually come through. So I'm just saying, all right? So, but I really want to focus in what marks these 144,000, this remnant that doesn't bow. So, all right, verse 2. I'll try not to make comment. I'll just read. Okay. And I heard a sound from heaven, like a roar of rushing waters and like a loud peal of thunder. The sound I heard was like that of harpists playing their harps. And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. No one could learn the song except the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the earth. These are those who did not defile themselves with women, for they kept themselves pure. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. I like that statement right there. I'm not commenting. Sorry. They were purchased from among men and offered as first fruits to God and the Lamb. No lie was found in their mouths. They are blameless. Then I saw another angel flying in midair, and he had the eternal gospel to proclaim to those who live on the earth, to every nation, tribe, language, and people. He said in a loud voice, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the springs of water." A second angel followed and said, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, which made all the nations drink the maddening wine of her adulteries." A third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast in his image and receives the mark on the forehead or on the hand, he too will drink of the wine of God's fury, which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath. He will be tormented with burning sulfur in the presence of the Lamb, of the holy angels and his Lamb. He and the smoke of their torment rises forever and ever. There is no rest day or night for those who worship the beast and his image, or for anyone who receives the mark of his name." Aren't you glad I'm not going to end the message right there? But it speaks of a day of judgment. Now, here's the good news. I do believe his church gets raptured before all that goes down. And that's a good deal. I want to be part of the few. So did you see the definition of the few, the 144,000? They did not defile themselves. They remained pure. They followed the Lamb wherever he goes. There was no lie in them. They were blameless. That's the few, the remnant. Did you know it's good news? The second angel, did you hear what he shouted? He said, "Babylon is fallen. The best that the world could ever come up with will not stand in the presence of God. All of man's wisdom and all of its system and all of its government and all of its answers will not stand when he comes." And there's a scary side of it, that those who are the many, those who give in to the Babylon, to the culture and the chaos and the conditions of this world, it's not real good stuff in those last two verses. This recipients of God's fury and the torment to come. I'm not going to be a part of that, because I'm a part of the remnant. I'm a part of the remnant. All right, I am coming to the ending, this idea of being the faithful. This has, as much as I'm not being specific, we live in a world where we're calling evil good. There are questions of purity, and in particular, and sexual purity was even mentioned in this chapter. And we got to be the faithful that stay obedient to Christ. It says that it references the Babylon drinking the maddening wine of her adulteries. And I like that word, maddening. Are you amazed at some of the places that we are in cultural thought today? You never thought we would be there. It truly is maddening. And yet the world is drinking it. And the question is, will we be the few who refuse to drink that? That don't bow. And so I saved the zinger in verse 12. So Pastor Sam, that's scary, weird verse kind of thing. Give me some very practical, what do I do with all that? And I'm going to let John do it, John who wrote this right here. And so here's verse 12, and it's a 3-point sermon all by itself. this call. So all of this, all of that crazy scenario he just laid out there, this calls for what? One, patient endurance on the part of the saints who, number two, obey God's commandments, and three, and remain faithful to Jesus. I thought that was a pretty good place to land right there. What does all this mean? I get it. We live in the chaos and the culture and the conditions that are contrary to God's call in our lives. And there's a wide road, but in the midst of that, we're choosing a narrow road. And when it comes to the remnant, when it comes to the saints, when it comes to the few, when it comes to the chosen, the call is for patient endurance. Those are not usually words you like to hear. It calls obeying his commands. And it calls us to remain faithful to Jesus through it all. I'm going to have Ben come up here. He's going to play. I made him do an old school song. He's going to sing, I Have Decided to Follow Jesus. I love that phrase. These 144,000, they follow the Lamb wherever he goes. The few and the faithful are the ones who follow the Lamb. That's what it means to remain faithful to Jesus. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to just read my conclusion off my paper. Sometimes my writing's better than my thinking. I don't know what that means. I ask this. I ask you to ask this question. Am I a part of the remnant? See, judgment is often pictured as a sorting. Whether it's fish caught in a net, whether it's the wheat and the tares, whether it's the sheep and the goats, those are literal pictures that Jesus showed us of the kingdom. And will you be numbered among the few and the remnant? Am I the one whom God would declare the few and the faithful? Am I the chosen? Am I the worker? Am I the one left standing while those around me are bowing? What I would ask you to do, Ben's going to sing through it one time, and before we respond in any way, I'll tell you where we're going with this, but I want you to talk with the Lord. And I kind of guarantee you, like if I right now just gave an altar call, who wants to be a part of the remnant, stand to your feet, I could get all of you to stand up. But more importantly, what I want you to do is I want you to ask God that question, and I want you to look for the confirmation in your heart. Here's the good news. If you haven't been a part of the remnant, you can be. I believe that. Maybe there needs to be a shift in your life that you've been not necessarily the worker, not necessarily that few and faithful that are different and on that narrow road. But guess what? Today can be your day where you make a choice and a decision. And so I want you to, as he sings through this a first time, to ask the Lord and then look for that confirmation in your heart and your life. And then when that's done, we'll sing through it all again, and then I'm going to ask you to, we're going to do the reverse altar call. Did you know Nebuchadnezzar was like the satanic altar call? When the music plays, bow down to me. But we're going to do the reverse when we get to that point. We're going to say, as we sing this, if you can honestly say, I am that remnant. I have made that choice. I'm going to follow the Lamb wherever he goes. What are those other verses? And we're going to sing them, right? The world behind me, the cross before me. Though none go with me, still I'm going to follow. So when we get to that point, we're going to stand. But would you just, right now, Lord, I pray that you would just speak to hearts and lives, that you would confirm in us today that we are the few, that we are the chosen, that we are the remnant. And Lord, I pray you'd reveal in us anything that wouldn't be marked as faithful. And Lord, that we would surrender that today. And Lord, that we would be counted among the few and the faithful, the chosen, the worker, the remnant of God. We choose to follow you. Speak to us, Lord.